Yes, what an amazing feeling of excitement and anticipation to be able to start this next exciting installment of the Nongdrois with Geshe Zopa. That seems to be a really unique way to be able to do them, and so incredibly kind and perfectly tailored to us Westerners. I hope you feel about that the same way as I do, but that I've only just had a moment to think about it, of how incredibly fortunate we are, because this was the first initiation that Geshe Zopa gave in Australia, and people have been requesting for like over 10 years, and he only just said yes, and we were the first centre for it to happen. So that's a result of our group karma. It's a two-way thing. If we hadn't have done the refuge Nongdro and been harmonious and really enthusiastic about practice, it wouldn't have happened. So already we should feel like really kind of stable and confident about it. So was there anything in particular that stood out to you during that whole weekend? Anything at all? What was the thing? Yeah, Ella, clear initiation. It was clear because it was in English. And Eddie asked me, have we done an initiation in English before? And I mean, we have with Lama Zopa Rinpoche, but that's like an intergalactic initiation. That's kind of a bit different. And then Geshe Tashi Tsering's given initiations with really clear translation, but just in English going straight in like that, as well as the clear and relaxed way that Geshe Zopa had, that, you know, even if you have a tendency to freak out or stress, you know, you didn't have to. So yeah, what else? Anything else stood out to anybody in particular? Yeah, Bev. Well spotted, Bev. That's right. He did give us the four empowerments. So normally, a Jenang is the blessing of body, speech, and mind. So it's the three empowerments. And then the fourth, the Vas. And so that means that it's actually a full initiation, which is why we now have permission to self-generate.
So even though he did a full initiation, like a highest yoga tantra, normally you get to do the 6-session yoga as a commitment to that. So why didn't Geshe-la make
Oh,
that
yes,
a
good question.
commitment?
I'll come to it. That's the number one burning question. Let's just set a little motivation that I've taken from this first teaching from Geshe-la from the Friday night. And then we can dive into the nitty-gritty of the practice. Just settling your body and then your mind. So the most important thing with our posture is to have a straight spine and to feel relaxed. So a balance between the two. Putting in some effort, but also being relaxed. So let any tension drop away from the neck and the shoulders. Also pull the shoulders back a little bit so that the whole chest heart area is open. So have your head just slightly tilted forward, chin tucked in. Jaw relaxed, tongue on the upper palate behind the top teeth. Eyes with just a sliver of light coming in, just very lightly closed. Hands in the lap if it's comfortable, right palm on top of left with the thumbs touching. Becoming stable, aware where we are. And refreshing our motivation for our whole practice of this life. So remembering how important it is to generate a motivation, and that it's got to be a motivation that's dharma, not just virtuous. That we can be good-hearted, we can wish to help others, but we have to make it dharma. We have to think that it's for more than just this life, but it's the big picture for this and future lives. What's going to happen to us and others? And then secondly, the importance of having an altruistic motivation. That if we take a moment to reflect, we are the same as others in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. And how Geshe-la pointed out, we're even the same as the bodhisattvas in wanting happiness. They too want a lasting pure happiness, just like us. Setting our
Right.
motivation that it can include the well-being of every single living being. And then thirdly, that not just a bodhicitta motivation, but including our motivation specifically for the practice of tantra, because that is the swiftest way to become enlightened in just one lifetime, or even in this very session. And time is of the essence because the more we observe the world, the more terrible things seem to be. So there's a real imperative to quickly become enlightened, and the best way to do that is with tantric practice, the swiftest path. And then recognizing that we have this potential, it's an innate potential, can give us the confidence to really set this as our motivation for our practice of the Vajrasattva Nongdro and for our class tonight, and to continue to sustain us throughout the year. Okay, so thank you. There was in that first teaching that Geshe-la gave, when he was talking about the motivation, it was really interesting because, where was it? He was saying that our motivation, like, is it's for the fear of the lower realms. What's going to happen to us when we die? We don't want to go to the lower realms. Then the second one, the motivation from a human realm point of view, is that it's not just to get rid of obvious suffering or pain. Because often we just practice when things go wrong, and when things go right, we're walking around going, "Oh, I'm happy, everything's okay." But actually, the main practice as human beings is this compounded, pervasive suffering, and that's the main thing to overcome. But then also for the bodhisattvas, the thing to overcome is that what's called abiding nirvana. So to not become enlightened and then that's it, just achieve one's own nirvana, but to do it for others. As usual, when I was doing the transcript, I've only managed to do the Friday night one, and it's 14 pages, and I just can't believe how much Geshe-la manages to cover in one short evening. Every time. The thing that really stood out for me, just in terms, it's a phrase that Geshe-la uses a lot, which is being under control of others' power. Do you remember that? He's talking about karma and being under control of others' power. And it's a really interesting way of talking about it because he means karma and delusion. That's what powers us. But it's also just being under the control of impermanence and other people and the environment and the government and all of this kind of thing, this kind of abiding discomfort that we have of being powerless. But in it, when he says that being under others' control, it's so good because it takes away this automatic idea that we have to blame ourselves, that it's our own fault. It's not, it's others, it's another thing, it's not us. The delusions are not us. The negative karma is not us. Everything that's powering it's not us, it's others' control. What's us is that innate Buddha nature. So it's nice, it's all built in that little phrase. So that's the one that really stood out for me. And then, of course, how Vajrasattva is the direct antidote to all these limitations, to the power of others' power. Right. So with that, questions. So the first one that Francesca asked, so yes, and that Bev brought up, we've had a full initiation. And me and Ben were talking about this before, how Geshe-la just has managed to just slide us into highest yoga tantra practice without any stress or commitments or freak out at all. Like, it's totally incredible. So I asked him what actually did happen. And so he said exactly what you picked up, Bev, which is that we got the four initiations, body, speech, mind, and the vase initiation. And so that makes it a full initiation, even though it was called a jhana. And so that's why we have this permission to self-generate as Vajrasattva in the practice. And so I know he talked about that over the weekend of different ways to purify the world, self and others. And we'll go into that in the following weeks. But also how we identify that then if we do the practice and at the end of the practice arise as Vajrasattva and spend the rest of our day as Vajrasattva, it's going to supercharge our day, our merit, our swift path. It also means that we have the permission to self-generate as any lower tantra deity. This is like an extraordinary boon. As Medicine Buddha, as Chenrezig, if you're doing Yungnes now, you can self-generate as Chenrezig. Really incredible. In terms of the vows, he said that it was kind of implicit in the Genang that we've got the all the sets of vows, but it wasn't explicitly there. He said it was very subtle. So it's more like the intention or the practice of the vows without itemizing each of them. So again, we're there, but we're there in a very, very gentle, subtle way. Yeah, Bev. Both, Bodhisattva vows and tantric vows. Yeah, you have the tantric vows. So you know how sometimes you can get the Bodhisattva vow, one thing or all of them itemized. So we've got the tantric vows, but not itemized. But we hold the vow. Yeah. Yes, that's right. So that means in Guru Puja, when we renew our vows, then you can do that bit, renew the vows. Yep, we are. So Geshe-la was very clear of what we need to do, and we don't have to add in any extras. You might have noticed online, the beginning of the weekend, I shared a thing that was prepared by Annie Kunsank that she took from various other teachings. I've taken that off our website because it just muddies the waters. The commitment in there was different to what the commitment given by Geshe-la. And also the practices in there were different. And I just thought, nah, this is way too complicated. So I've replaced it with a different text, which I'll go into in a moment. So yeah, part of that was all these extra things to do and commitments to keep, and none of that is relevant to us. Yeah.
From Ava, she asks, how do we practice correctly? Are there more practices besides the little booklet on Vajrasattva practice?
There are. So I've got a show and tell for the practices, but what we're going to do is roll it out slowly, like we did with the refuge. We're going to just do a little bit at a time. So we start simple, get really comfortable and familiar with simple, and then we'll start adding in the extras.
Geshe-la mentioned always having a Vajra bell with us or a picture of one. Is that a prerequisite
Yes,
that
having a Vajra bell
we
or a
have
picture of one with you at all times is really good. And there is actually a little picture of the implements and things that it's that I can share. If you can email me about it, Francesca, that's kind of just like cricket card size, so you keep it in your wallet. But also Geshe-la said, of course, that if you've got the counters with the little Vajra and bell on them, then that counts as well. Yep, that's it. Yeah. We can do six session guru yoga if we want to do six session guru yoga, but we don't have to.
What's the symbolism of having to have the Vajra bell with us? Is that just part of the tantric
It's just
practice or?
commitment to have the implements of the deity with you so that you remember to always be manifesting as the deity. Having of the little credit card size implements of the deity in my wallet hasn't really done the trick for me, but
I have a little trick that's similar to what you do, Miffy. I've taken a photo of the Vajra bell on my phone, and that's my home screen. So every time I pick up my phone, I see it.
Very skillful, Demi. So there you go. Good use of your home screen on your phone. We do keep our phones with us at all times. Incredible practice of mindfulness for our phones, and not only that, but we feel naked without them. So that's exactly how we should feel without our Vajra bell. Okay, so then in terms of doing our practice, if you're already doing six session guru yoga, you could just slot your Vajrasattva practice into there and do your mantras there. in the second part, where the Vajradhara melts into light into you, then you meditate on emptiness, and then you arise as Vajrasattva. So there, that's when you do your mantras. Before you do the vows and the on the mandala offering, you just slot it right in there. So maybe we should backtrack a bit. So for the commitment, there was the either to do the 100,000 retreat or 21 each day for the rest of your life. And if we're doing the Nongdros, to try and get the 100,000 done in a year. So I'm just kind of taking it as much as I can, which is I'm doing my 21 a day. Even if I'm falling asleep like after each third or fourth one, and then waking myself up again half an hour later and doing a few more and falling asleep. It's really hard to set up a new habit, especially at night. So I'm struggling. Don't worry if anybody else is. This is part of it. So that's my minimum. I'm doing my 21 long ones. It has to be long ones. And then trying to do some more throughout the day. So I think same as with the refuge, as long as you have some form of prayers that bookend it, a motivation and a dedication that you do, then and you do your an amount of mantras there, the rest of the day you can be reciting those mantras, and I'm pretty sure they can count. Because how are we going to get how am I going to do 3 malas a day? Not possible. Yeah, look, if you're on a bus and you're sitting there and you're on a bus for 20 minutes, you can say your Vajrasattva mantras, but don't have that as the main practice. Have you got to still have your main practice bookended? But I think Geshe-la has been just very encouraging for us. So if you've got a few minutes here or there to do more, then do more. Yep. 100,000. Yes. Just like the refuges that you did out and about can count. And so in terms of the commitment, then again, if we can do 100,000, fantastic. But the main point was just to really blitz it, to set us up that this year is just total immersion in Vajrasattva practice. That's the point.
Does that also mean to do it with the four opponent powers and doing the visualizations? Or can you do that as a separate thing if you're not just
You've got to do the four opponent powers at least for
once a
once
day?
in those.
Yeah.
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 And the visualization, yeah, it's good if you can do the visualization and the mantra at the same time, but if you can't, you do the visualization first and then you do the mantra. Also, Geshe-la did mention that, like, if you're incredibly sick, for instance, and then just do one mantra. Try and do the 21. If you can't do the 21, if you're in hospital and you're in and out of a coma, then just do one mantra and you haven't broken it. So it was really nice. It wasn't a hard and fast rule. If it's the same as the other Nongdros, if you miss a day, you go back to zero. Yeah. So what I think it was Demi that was saying that. The way, for instance, for me, where I'm panicking that I'm going to forget to do them at night because it's a nighttime practice. Demi was saying, just do the 21 in the morning and get them done, and then you can do a practice that night as well and do more if you want. I'm like, oh, I think that might be the way to do it, so you don't panic that you're going to miss a day. So you've got to put your Vajra, you've got to then put your Vajrasattva into 6 session Guru Yoga, and then you won't ever miss it. That's the routine, and then you can do extras on top of that. And so then the ones that we continue to do with in a various form of a sadhana, whether it's the very, very short pocket sadhana or that little one, or whether it's the sadhanas that are in this book, which is the one that I've put the link to online. So this is from FPMT, Preliminary Practice of Vajrasattva, and in it's got a lot of the information that was in the previous handout about how to set up a retreat, all the different visualizations, really nice detail from Lama Zopa Rinpoche. And it's got a big long retreat sadhana, and then at the end of that abbreviated sadhana, and then it's got the Haruka Vajrasattva Sog practice, and then it's got another sadhana, and at the end of that, abbreviated sadhana. So just keep flipping through until you get to the abbreviated one. And I think one of the abbreviated ones is the pocket Vajrasattva. So you find one of those, and then when we go to do our actual Vajrasattva retreats, we'll do one of the retreat sadhanas. And so we'll slowly kind of roll it out that way. Demi, what were the questions?
And the first one's from Mandy. Can you add it into your morning practice?
Yes, of course, but the main thing, it should be a nighttime practice. So because it's at the end of the day, so that you don't, so that your karma doesn't multiply overnight, and it doesn't become a complete a fully, like, a ripening karma. Yes. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche said, if we don't purify, we are insane because of the consequences. Like, he made no bones about it. But yeah, so you do it at the end of the day. Yeah, it's good to do them at night. Yes. And yeah, if during the day you're doing the long ones, then you could do the short ones at night, but we can't count the short ones. Any negativities that day. So if you, yeah, that's right. So if you can't do 21 long mantras at night, then at least do 28 short mantras, but they can't be counted because this is the Nondro is the long mantra. 28. That's right, because that's the number differentiation. 21 long or 28 short. But for Nondro and for the commitment, it's long.
If
Yep.
you were sick and you went to the 28 short ones, you haven't broken your Ngdro commitment, but you don't add them to the count. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's right. With the Nondro, Geshe-la said one. He did say one long. Yeah. You're gonna have to struggle in and out of your coma to get the 100 syllables.
Can somebody else say it into your ear for you so you're hearing it, or do you actually
If
have to?
you're actually in a coma, and
Yeah.
yes, people can say them into your ear, and I actually feel that if you're in a coma, you're not actually having a day and a night and a day and a night. So, what a day and a commitment is a relative thing. So yeah, you might have missed 3 days of commitment, but from your side, you haven't. You missed 3 days of life. That's right. So somebody else can be whispering them into your ear. That's great. And then they do say it's good to retake the initiation if you can, but just thinking it through, I just don't think you've broken it. There's no way.
It requires mental consciousness.
It requires mental consciousness to break a commitment. Yeah.
And on that track, Ava also asks, do you have to say the mantra out loud, or can you just do it in your mind mentally?
No, you can do however you like. Doesn't have to be out loud. Doesn't have to be, it can be mental or out loud. That is fine. So each of them have their various strengths. Generally, out loud is more of coarse recitation, and then once you get that going, then you go to mental recitation, which is more subtle. So that just helps focus your attention that way. But however you feel is fine.
There was also one from Kerry. Kerry asks, can I also add the practice into LZK Guru Yoga practice?
Yes, but I wouldn't know where or how. I'm not sure. Lama Tsongkhapa Kapa Guru Yoga is usually Manjushri practice, isn't it? Yeah, I think it's more Manjushri. So I wouldn't necessarily do that. I would either put it into six session Guru Yoga, or in the pocket practice. So with the pocket practice, what's really amazing about it is that it's got actually the refuge Nongdro in there, because it's the Lam Rim. So it just leads you through really amazingly with the, it's incorporated the four opponent powers and the refuge Nongdro. So even though it's this tiny little practice, it really flows on very, very nicely. So class, maybe Stacey, could you just hand these out for anyone who just have one on hand now, and if you don't want another copy, you can always give it back. But so with the pocket practice, what I try and do is the actual practice starts with in a nice border around it with the motivation, the power of dependence, taking refuge. So that's the start of the practice. This is like the bare bones of what we should be doing. And then I actually read through those motivations because those motivations make it Dharma. And it's important for us to be specific about that. And then it makes it not just Dharma, but for not just this life, but future lives. And then not just for ourselves, but for others. So then it adds on bodhicitta. And then, of course, it's a tantric practice. So it's a really skillful little pocket practice. And also, at the end, on page 17, there's the absorption and the dedication. So it's a beautiful dedication that incorporates emptiness, because, of course, that's the main purifier, is emptiness. And in the absorption, top of page 17, Guru Vajrasattva, father and mother, melt into light and absorb into you, and your body, speech, and mind becomes one with Vajrasattva. So that's for everybody, whether you've done the initiation or not, everybody does that. If we've done the initiation, then you can be a little bit more specific about what this means, becoming one. Then you can do self-generation, that's right, you can identify, fully identify with Vajrasattva. So again, it's a really nice, subtle way of writing the sadhana. So this one is a sadhana that absolutely everybody can do. And if then on top of that, as we go throughout the year, then I'll be able to make it more specific. What does that becoming one mean? You should be doing it every day. Yeah. Because we've got to put some kind of formal bookends to the practice, because it's not just Vajrasattva mantras, it's got to be Vajrasattva with the four opponent powers. Even though in the teachings, Geshe-la said the four opponent powers are there everywhere in Vajrasattva, but we have to kind of be aware of it. So yes, to do this is the most simple of the practices, and to do the visualizations with the mantra, and then that serve as a really good basis for our Nondro. But even if you're not doing Nondro, if you're just doing Vajrasattva every night, it's got to have these components in it, or it's not a complete practice. Part of the Nondro is this, not just the mantra. Nope. But you could just say it really fast, Ella. And so then one night when I was just like delirious, because my sleep patterns are just all over the show because the cat died and all of these things. So I've been going to sleep at 7 o'clock in the morning and then waking up at 11 going, oh, hello, welcome to Ayurveda Tapasana, and so on. And so when am I going to do my practice and what day is it? So then one day I just did page 9, the motivation. I did the mantras and then dedication, page 17. So that's as skinny as you can make it. All right. No, well, the dedication seals it. It doesn't close everything off. What it does, no, you absolutely have to, when you've got a good thing going, then you seal it. So what you do is you seal it by dedicating for enlightenment and remembering emptiness. So that seals it, so it can't be broken, it can't diminish. And it becomes a fully ripening karmic seed. But because you've become one, throughout the day, you're still Vajrasattva. And what does Vajrasattva do? Say mantras. Not every time you do it, once a day. This is your bookends. Bev's been doing it every time she sees Vajrasattva. That's right, Bev. That's exactly what you should be doing. Don't stop. Don't stop. So even if you don't formalize it with this very, very skinny little pocket practice, each time you're going to do a burst of mantras, set your motivation, do the mantras, and then dedicate for enlightenment in emptiness. And then the energy cannot be lost and it cannot be destroyed by anger. When do you self-generate and when do you be your ordinary self being purified and all that kind of thing? Yes. So That Geshe-la did go more in detail of that in the weekends. I haven't done those transcripts, but that's also why I thought we just start with this booklet, because it is okay. He just said it so clearly that when we are purifying ourselves, our negative karma, we're purifying our conventional self, the one that has the negative karma. Our innately pure mind that is now one with Vajrasattva has no negative karma to purify. That's not what we're purifying. So we be our ordinary selves, which we naturally are. We don't have to like self-generate as our ordinary selves, do we? It's pretty automatic. And so we do the purification and then we get back to reality, which is actually identifying with our fundamental selves, Vajrasattva. But then even as we go on, when we do the practice, you can still, how they say, it's the same in Yungnaes as well. You still have your image of yourself as Vajrasattva, but you release the divine pride aspect. And so you let your automatic vision of yourself as being ordinary come up, and then you purify that. As long as throughout the day we try and remember to arise as Vajrasattva, then just our very presence becomes beneficial for the world, becomes beneficial for anyone who we talk to, anyone who beeps at you in traffic, all of those things that you become beneficial just by your very existence. I don't know, I don't drive, Cheryl. Is it safe to say the mantras while you're driving? Yes, everyone says yes. Yep. With visualizations? No, everyone's shaking their head. Saying the mantras, you don't have to do visualization and mantra recitation at the same time. Yeah. They can be
Okay.
one and then the next. That's fine. So yeah, say the mantras while you're driving. Or you could get a little clicker counter and stick it on the dashboard of your car and just, oh yep, Angela, go for it.
So I just carried on doing my daily Vajrasattva practice because that's what I know how to do. But instead of the preliminary practices from Lama Zopa, which I was doing, I'm doing it from the daily purification booklet because it's kind of more tantra. But I'm using the visualizations from the preliminary practice because it's not in that little book. And I just want to check that is the visualization we're meant to be doing. There isn't a visualization in the little book. In the little book, it says, see the tantra path of purifications, but it is in the FPMT one. And so I've carried on
Yeah,
doing
good.
that.
Yes, very good. Yep. Oh, yes. It just says downward cleansing, upward cleansing, and instantaneous cleansing.
Yeah.
And we just have to know what that means, which we will.
I'm counting that towards my count now, but you're going to help us as we go with the more tantric aspects, the self-generation and the front generation as we go. Is that right?
Well, it's all tantra. You're already soaking in it. Yes, hopefully we're all continuing the refuge. We're adding Vajrasattva to our really well-established refuge practice. So we should be doing refuge every morning, and whether you're doing it with your daily prayers, but again, Lama Zopa Rinpoche did say to do that, the daily, the speech blessing, and the method to transform a suffering life into happiness, including enlightenment, daily practice. That's really the prescription that Rinpoche said everyone should do. And he spent days and days and days teaching on it in Bendigo. And he asked everyone to do it. And he said, including all the Sangha that already do heaps and heaps of highest yoga tantra practices, do this practice. He thought it was really important. So yes, keep doing that. That's the morning one. And then yeah, if you're like worried like me that I'm gonna forget to do Vajrasattva at night, do Vajrasattva 21 times as well, but then also do it at night.
And you said, so you're kind of Vajrasattva for the day. At the end of the practice, because I was kind of doing like the Shakyamuni Buddha one, where you visualize the Buddha coming to your heart and the lotus closing over. Do you do that at the end of the practice, or you just leave yourself as Vajrasattva and then do dedication?
What you can do, for instance, you can do the morning one from Lama Zopa Rinpoche, the Glance Lam Rim, and then at the end of that, the refuge field melts into light, absorbs into you. You meditate on emptiness, and then through the power of your compassion, you arise as Vajrasattva. Then you can do your speech blessing as Vajrasattva, and then you can do your 21 Vajrasattvas. So if you've had the initiation, Vajrasattva, father and mother, melt down through your crown and counterrest at your heart and dissolve into the indestructible drop at your heart. That's your fundamental mind, and that becomes one. And so then you can think your conventional body, the lotus petals, 8 petals of your heart, gently close over the guru there at your heart, and then it's sealed with a double vajra. But Geshe-la said it's like you tie it up with a bow. Vajra looks like a bow, and what that bow is the name mantra of your guru. So then, and in that you're meditating on emptiness. But so that's not the end of the story. That's just the end of the chapter. Because then the next chapter, arising as Vajrasattva. Then you stay as Vajrasattva. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So then you get up as Vajrasattva and you go and make a cup of coffee as Vajrasattva. I don't know Geshe's Opus name mantra. I don't know if he has one.
Yeah.
We could ask, and maybe we could request. I'm not sure how they happen. It's a very mysterious process. So usually it's some very high lama that composes the name mantra. So it took a long time before Geshe Thachi Tseren received a name mantra.
A few joinees who haven't done refuge reverse last year, so they're a little bit lost when we talk about lamas or Rinpoche practice and speech blessing. So maybe just to help them out to answer that, what do they do if they kind of missed the refuge train and they've jumped straight in now?
They can just email me and I'll send them the Rinpoche's daily practice. So it's just Rinpoche's daily practice that has Lam Rim and a few extra verses from Shanti Deva, one verse from Geshe Langri Tangpa, and it's your basic daily practice to do, as well as the speech blessing. So that's not really the Nongdro. That was just what we were couching the refuge Nongdro in. It's very short and sweet. Of course, you can do this practice without doing the Nongdro, and people can come along to the Vajrasattva nights without doing Nongdro, just doing Vajrasattva practice, and even without having had the initiation. That's fine, because I can just say it's all that really changes is at the end, you know, what, and I can just say if you've had the initiation or not. A couple of other things, just in no particular order. What was really amazing, another thing that stood out to me, was when Geshe-la was talking about the light coming from Vajrasattva and also the various lights of the purification of Om Ahum, how it was always tinged with gold. Do you remember that? It was white light tinged with gold, or blue light tinged with gold. And I was talking to Pearlie about this, and somehow it's made all the difference, because it's gone from like the cold white to a warm white. And that was really the thing that stood out to me about the way that Geshe-la talked about Vajrasattva and the whole feeling of it, is the incredible love of Vajrasattva. And that's like there as the goldness in the white light. And through all this time, I've never realized that, of course, Vajrasattva loves us so much that Vajrasattva is going to help us purify so we don't have to suffer anymore. And it's completely different from this, like, I've been so bad and I have to purify. Isn't that just like, as Ben, who's left, said, our Abrahamic residue is there that thinks, you know, that's like, oh, we feel so bad and then we've got to have Vajrasattva, and then we do the Vajrasattva practice and we think, yeah, but I'm still bad. You know, it didn't work. All of that stuff that goes underneath. This is totally different, gold tinged. So I asked Geshe-la about that, and so he said also the gold tinge is because of the preciousness of gold and how it's so nice to look at, you know, the warmth of it, but also it indicates the preciousness. The other thing is that because now that we have had a Highest Yoga Tantra initiation, it also means that now you can come to all the pujas and start learning how to do all of the mudras and use Bell and Dorji and a Damaru and the inner offering. So instead of just having to sit there and be an observer, now you can be a full participant. So I think for the rest of the year, I'll just leave the pujas as like beginner's pujas so that we can all have a go and get used to using a Bell and Dorji and make some noise. And it's a nice environment to learn, you know, amongst friends and family. And so then when if and when you'd like to have an inner offering prepared, set up for you, then I can help you with that as well. So the inner offering that Geshe-la was talking about, so he had his in a metal, beautiful inlaid kind of skull cup here on the desk, but what we use are little jam jars. Not the big little jam jars, but the little jam jars. So the first time that I went overseas, when I came back, my carry-on luggage was incredibly heavy and they were like, what do you have in here? And I said, oh, cheese and jam. And they're like, what? And so, of course, they opened it up. I had a trumpet for my father and cheese and jam. And so all the tours that I went, I kept all the little jam jars because they had the little jam jars. So I came back from my European trip with something like 24 little jam jars just spread all out. When they opened my bag to have a look, just went over everywhere. So I have a lot of little jars. They're really good because they're not too big, but they have to have this little it's like a little bit of a rubber seal in them, so they click shut properly. Can't just be an ordinary jar, because there's nothing worse than in your bag if they tip over and all the sticky goes over everything. It's impossible to get out. And then there's the inner offering pill, which is about maybe 2 millimeters big. Little pill. So I asked Geshe Tashi Sering 1 year, hey, you're going overseas, can you bring us back some inner offering pills? And he just laughed, fell off his chair laughing, like, ah, ha, ha, what, like from the inner offering pill shop? Kind of like I've asked to bring back a Harry Potter broomstick from the Harry Potter broomstick shop, you know? So he did bring me back some. He said, these are really, really precious. Put them in half or quarters. This has to last like for the lifetime of Lungri Tumpa Center, basically, because they're all different types of pills. So it might have been in offering pills. Then there's also the little pills that Venerable Alsa got for Nyungnays. So that's for blessing the Nyungnay vase, their action vase pills. And then, of course, there's lots of Mani pills. There's Poa pills. There's all different sorts. And Geshe-la mentioned a few of those and said the names very quickly in Tibetan, but that was it over the weekend. I haven't transcribed that yet. So all these pills are made of tiny, they're a bit like, bark flower remedies or those things, tiny minuscule amounts of precious substances. And some are very, very difficult to find. But the inner offering, like I often put up a picture of that when we do a puja, and sometimes we go through what's in it, the five meats and the five nectars. So it's made of disgusting stuff that's transformed into the five wisdoms. So the five meats transformed into the five nectars. And I mean, it's this very similar process like with SOG. You have bala and madana, you meat and alcohol, the disgusting stuff that's transformed into bliss and emptiness. So, again, with the inner offering pill, it's like that, but there's all sorts of special substances that are like blessings. And it just stays there in the jar. It doesn't dissolve or anything. And if you accidentally tip your jar over, then you have to crawl around on the floor until you find it or pick through the carpet until you find it. So when we get to it, when you do have a jar, it is very handy to have a piece of blue tack with your jar, so that you can blue tack it to your table so that it doesn't accidentally slide off, because that is a real disaster if that happens. Well, the monastery scenario is it's only the Vajra Master that has it, so it's okay. And the Vajra Master has everything set out on the table just like Geshe Zopa did. Yep. And so the Vajra Master is like the designated practitioner to be Vajrasattva and do all the rituals at the puja, and then everybody else can follow the law.
You know how you spoke about what was the most meaningful thing that happened? For all the years that I've been to teachings, like 30-something, I'd kept hearing about arising as a deity and that divine pride. And that was actually the first time I actually had a really big realization about it. It was almost like...
Yeah, Francisca, you're not the only one who said that. Actually, a couple of other people have said this to me, that how Geshe-la said that it's your fundamental mind that arises as the deity. Just putting in that little bit of detail, it just made it happen. instead of, oh, I'm imagining this or that, it was like the mechanics of it were revealed and then it happened. So we can do the pujas, we can practice the pujas. I've slotted in a couple of retreat days where we can do retreats together. I haven't put them up online yet, but I can tell you the dates. So I've got the online Friday fortnights, and they start at the end of this month. Then we've got the beginning of October. It's a long weekend for King's birthday. We'll do afternoons, so 2 p.m. each of those afternoons, probably 2 till 5. And we can have it as a retreat set up, and I can make a beautiful altar, and we can, you know, do one of the abbreviated sadhanas. And then the next one is in between Christmas and New Year. So I was looking at it, and we can do the 27th, 28th, and 29th. So for those of you that aren't going to go to Chen Rezi Institute and do a residential retreat, you know how they always have one in between. If you're stuck in Brisbane, then you can come to 27, 28, 29, and that'll probably be 9 till 3. The 29th is Sog Day, so we'll finish with Haruka Vajrasattva Sog. So it'll be really, really nice way, and then a nice way to tie up our year's practice as well for the holidays. Me and Stefan were talking about, well, what about having a in-person get-together? And one possibility is to have a weekly Tuesday afternoon in person. Yeah, so Stefan's really thinking that we need something to help us really blitz it with the accumulations. And because practicing together, it really helps, it creates energy. Whereas like practicing at home, it can take a bit of energy to get started. So it'll really help us keep the momentum going, this in-person thing. So Stefan stepped up, and he's going to be the main driver of this one. Woo-hoo. And no doubt you can all have a go leading a session, because it'll all be pretty simple. Yes. Okay, so really heart disciples of Geshe Tashi Sering, last Chödön Rinpoche, who's Geshe Tashi Sering's guru, Lama Zopa Rinpoche's guru, incredibly high lama. He's passed away now, but asked him, and so Chödön Rinpoche composed it. Lama Zopa Rinpoche has passed away, we can't ask him, and Geshe Lama Khonchog's passed away, we can't ask him. So I wonder who we could ask.
His Holiness the Dalai Lama.
For both sides, simultaneously, must be the right answer.
Not if we do it as a group, because this is our group karma. We have to do it as a group.
He's going to go on pilgrimage or be over there. And manages to have an audience with His Holiness, then you'll have to request on our behalf.
Like slip him something.
I'm just going to slip you my 100,000 Vajrasattva non-troyos across the table.
Quite
this is the currency, my non-troyos. Okay, so then just before we do our a little go over practice to all get started, one of the things, remember, that Geshe-la said was when we hold our mala, you hold it in your left hand over the third finger. So it's left hand because it's Mother Tantra. Haruka Vajrasattva, this highest yoga tantra Vajrasattva, is Mother Tantra. In highest yoga tantra, there's either Father Tantra or Mother Tantra, but it's Mother Tantra. So it's left-handed.
Father Tantra.
Yep. Father Tantra is right-handed. So it's nothing to do with whether you're left or right-handed. It's to do with the practice. Vajrasattva Mother Father is Mother Tantra because it's mostly about the emptiness aspect. So that's what makes it Mother Tantra, is this focus on emptiness. Mostly about that, so bringing forth Dharmakaya. And Father Tantra is an equal focus on emptiness and the rainbow body, the method and the emptiness. But Mother Tantra has these other little special extras. So the left hand, and then on the third finger is also because each of our fingers, the four fingers represent the four means of helping sentient beings: peace, increase, power, and wrath. So normally it's over the peacefuls, by peaceful means that we help others. Then the second finger is the increase. The third finger is by control or power or charm. So it's really the finger to do with the desire realm, control over the desire realm. And then
Can you just explain, so is your pointer finger number one?
So normally we have it on our right hand over the pointer finger. because that's normally what most of the practices that we do. But for Haruka Vajrasattva, it's over on the left hand, over the ring finger. With Vajrasattva, it's really easy to do because the mantra is quite long. Like if you're doing other Mother Tantra mantras and they're shorter, it's really hard. But with this, it'll take quite a while, but you'll get used to it, and it's good to get used to it. And so if it gets hard to hold your mantra, your mala at your heart like this, start off with it at the heart, and then you can put your hand on your knee after that. But it's always good to start off at the heart like this. In the Vajrasattva Tsog practice, you say, Om Vajrasattva, Om Vajra Heruka Samaya. In the Sadhanas, you don't. You say, Om Vajrasattva. And the commitment that we've got is Om Vajrasattva. So I'm not sure. If you're always doing the Heruka, then I would actually just ask Geshe Zopa. Because really the mantra that we received from the Vajra Master, from the initiation master, was Vajrasattva. The bits at the end, whether it's Hum or it's Humpei, he was very lenient about whatever you like. But
you know, when you have a succession yoga commitment, you do a SOG commitment. What's the difference between normal SOG and Haruka Vajrasattva SOG?
Nothing. It's just SOG. SOG and SOG. So it's how it's blessed. It's blessed with the inner offering, with Bala and Madana. And so whether you do SOG in Guru Puja or you do SOG in Haruka Vajrasattva, doesn't matter. For Mother Tantra, there is kind of a commitment to do SOG practice. And so then I think on the two SOG days of the month, one is the Dharkas day and the other is the Dakinis day. So I think it's on the 10th of each of the month, it's Haruka day. And on the 25th of each month, it's the Vajigini day. I'm not sure. I have to find out. But SOG's really important with Mother Tantra because of this bliss and emptiness, this kind of focus. So whichever way you do the SOG is fine, Francesca. But Lama Yeshe really loved that practice, Haruka Vajrasattva Tsog, and it's really short and it's an incredible blessing focusing on emptiness. So it's incredible purification. And it's way shorter than doing Tsog and Guru Puja. So, you know, we just do it whenever we can.
With picking up the Vajra and Bell, I thought Geshe Zopa said at first, pick it up with the right hand and then pass the right to the left hand. But then later That's on, right. I thought I heard him say, pick it up with the left. But I think that was no, could have been an accident. Or
that was a typo. I heard him say that. Yes. It was a typo. You use your right hand, you pick up the Dorji, you pick up the bell, yep. You bring them both to your heart, and you transfer the bell to your left hand.
Thank you.
A really beautiful economy of movement. So instead of lunging over all of your stuff and crossing your hands, and you just very nicely pick up the Dorji, the bell, bring it to your heart, transfer the bell to your left. Okay, we'll do it online and we'll have a practice. Yeah.
Okay.
Okie dokie. Yes, Vajradhara and Vajrasattva, they're very close. But Vajradhara is the tantric aspect of the Buddha. So the sutra aspect of the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha. And in a way you can think the historical Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha. The sutra aspect of the Buddha, medicine Buddha. The tantric aspect of the Buddha, Vajradhara. So that's why in Sixth Session Guru Yoga, because it's the tantric aspect of the Buddha. And so then that's the main refuge. And then Vajradhara melts into light and then you arise as Vajrasattva, which is the purity of the Buddha's mind, the purification Buddha. Vajrasattva is Sanskrit. Dorji Sempa is Tibetan. Some a little bit in that first transcript, he was saying the meaning of Vajra and Sattva and Dorji and Sempa, because each one has a different nuance to it.
As Vajrasattva embracing Bhagavati.
Dorji Chang is Vajradhara. Dorji Chang, the tantric Buddha, so that's the Tibetan. We recognize that because, like Guru Puja, Lama Losang Tugwan Dorji Chen. That's dunk, 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 dunk. I mean, these things take a long time. One of the students was saying, I don't get it. How first we're Vajradhara and then we're Vajrasattva? Like, huh? Pardon, what happens? But of course, in there is this process of dissolving into emptiness and then arising in a form for the next bit in Succession Guru Yoga, which is the vows. So it's purifying the vows. If you're not doing Succession Guru Yoga, but you'd like to start doing it, then after the big initiations at Chenrezig Institute, I have asked Eddie to do one night explanation on how to do Succession Guru Yoga, and I have slotted it in for the 3rd of October, because it's a really lovely practice, but there's some bits in there that aren't written in there, probably because they're supposed to be obvious. But so we'll have one evening like that where, especially the newies, how to do Succession Guru Yoga, we'll go through it. In Bendigo, Lama Zoprimache taught us all the different tunes for this mantra. So this is one of the tunes. So it's the fairly fast tune if you're reciting out loud. I love it because it goes so, it's like goes uphill, you know, really get some speed. And also the chant way of saying Vajrasattva is to help us meditate on emptiness. So there's not much of a tune, so that it's, you know, emptiness is the without elaborations. So that's why it's has this pace to it, rather than all the frills and the elaborations. So there are other ways to recite the mantra. You know, in puja, it's much more elaborate. And of course, when you do it under your breath, you can do it super fast. Doesn't have to be to this tune. But if you are going to sing it out like this, it's good to have the inflection on the syllables like that tune. Okay, so thanks for coming, everybody, online and in person. What a fantastic start to our group practice. Have a brilliant time doing the nice short pocket version and just feel super happy doing that. And then next time we'll start adding in bits and pieces.